my bandage, and I felt him holding himself very still. Even his thumb had quit moving. It was then I knew what. "I think you can kiss me," I told him quietly.
"Not the way I want to kiss you."
My nipples and the bra under his daughter's top started tingling. "Maybe we should go get donuts," I suggested.
"Yeah,"
he grunted, like donuts weren't as awesome as they totally were. Like now," I pressed. It took him a second before he muttered,
"Right."
Bent in, touched his mouth to mine again, then let me go and got off the bed, taking my hand to pull me up with him. He held it as he walked me to the door, but I tugged his when we got there, so he stopped, turned, and looked down at me. "Thank you for making it all okay," I said on a really hard hand squeeze, hoping the squeeze would tell him just how much I meant those words.
"That was my line,"
he replied, squeezing my hand hard right back. I felt my chest constrict, collapsing in on itself to the point my next breath was a wheeze. Then I felt my eyes stinging. "Don't make me cry, it might hurt," I snapped. He grinned.
"There's no crying when there are 2 dozen donuts in the house."
"Holy crap. 2 dozen?
"Right, maybe 1 dozen. Shaw's had plenty of opportunity to dig in."
3 kids, 1 dozen donuts, maybe 10 minutes. Hickson, that's a little crazy. He reached out a hand and opened his bedroom door, declaring,
"That's junk Sunday."
With that, he led me out, and we barely made the mouth of the hall when Mamie announced,
"Dad got you custard-filled, chocolate buttercream-filled jelly, and he bought a bunch of glazed and raised chocolate cover just in case you didn't do fancy."
"Sounds perfect," I told her. And it did. But suddenly, everything was. A cramped apartment, a broken nose, 3 kids who barely knew me, 1 not knowing what to make of me, a future that was complicated. With my hand in Hickson's, it was all suddenly just that. Perfect.
The Drake family. "Gonna get her in bed," Hicks murmured, and his kids watched as their dad didn't scoot out from under Greta, who was totally out, stretched on their couch, her head resting on his thigh. Instead, he pulled her gently up into his arms before he got off the couch, holding her to his chest. She might have been out, but she turned her face into the side of his neck and slid her arm around the other side to hold on. "Be back in a minute," he kept murmuring. His kids watched him round the coffee table and head down the hall. When they heard their dad's bedroom door latch, Shaw, lounged in his beanbag from his room, whispered, "She's freaking awesome." And she was. Even Corinne thought she fit right into Junk Sundays. Mom would have a hemorrhage and get all mad or pout all day if they tried a Junk Sunday when Dad was with her. She did that when she wasn't even there. But Greta got in the swing of it and didn't once complain when Mamie did an arabesque or a chasse along the area in front of the television. Something she did a lot. In fact, she watched her every time with a smile on her pretty face, and she'd say things like, "Wow, Mamie, you're really good at that." And it wasn't fake. Not at all. She totally meant it.
"She's real nice and she's super pretty,"
Mamie whispered, coming up from lazing on the floor in front of the TV to sit cross-legged and look between her siblings.
"Always thought that when we go to see Miss Lou. She looks perfect with Daddy. Mom looks perfect with Dad,"
Corinne snapped quietly from her spot draped over the armchair. "Mom isn't with Dad anymore, Cor," Shaw pointed out, quiet and careful, like he always talked when he talked to Corinne about this stuff, which Corinne thought, especially these days, was way too much.
"And if she wanted to stay perfect, she shouldn't have made Daddy leave,"
Mamie stated resentfully, but still quietly. This resentment was new from Mamie. Then again, a lot of new things were coming from Mamie recently.
"There are things you don't know,"
Corinne told her little sister.
"Yeah, and there are things you don't know,"
Mamie shot back.
"Like how I heard him talking to Mom, and asking her would she please just tell him where she was at so he could get there with her and sort everything out. You heard that?
Shaw asked.
Yeah,
Mamie answered.
And he was, like, being real serious about it. Mom barely said anything. And I could tell even though I couldn't see him, it hurt him, like, a lot.
That made Corinne feel funny, but she admonished.
You shouldn't have listened to that. Why?
Mamie asked.
Because it's none of your business,
she answered. Mamie's eyes got big and mad.
My mom and dad aren't my business? That isn't. And anyway, that's not all there is to it. There's stuff you don't know. There's stuff Dad doesn't know. Well, you think maybe the person who should know is Dad?
Mamie asked sarcastically. Hey, we should talk about this later, Shaw told them. He's going to be back any second.
Yeah, like when?
Corinne asked her brother.
We barely see you anymore.
Shaw's face got soft when he reminded her.
I still pick you up for school, Cor, and take you home after we get done with our practices. I see you every day.
She looked to the TV.
Whatever. I like Greta,
Mamie declared stubbornly.
He hasn't been, well, Dad. Not since Mom made him leave. And today, with her around, he was Dad.
I know what you mean, Shaw murmured. Corinne did, too. There was a lot of talk about girls who weren't good if they didn't have a guy around. But apparently, there were guys who were better when they had a girl around. And their dad was one of them, especially after what happened last night. He was always at his best when something was going wrong, like when Corinne hurt her face, or when Shaw broke his arm, or when Mamie had that competition and she had a cold, so she got second place and she was devastated. That was why Mom always said he was in the only job he could ever do. He was at his best when he had people he could take care of. And Greta had been all awkward at first, when he'd touch her, or pull her close, or kiss her on the forehead in front of them. But then she'd settled in. But Dad was always settled in, like she'd been there for years, not just that day. And the way she sometimes looked at him, like he was... like she couldn't believe he was real.
It's cool you were cool with her, Cor,
Shaw told his sister.
Whatever. She's got great hair,
Corinne muttered. And a great lot of things, she didn't say.
Yeah, she does,
Shaw muttered back. Mamie giggled. Corinne rolled her eyes.
It's all gonna get better,
Shaw assured them.
Next weekend, Dad and me and Toast and Tommy and Larry and Donna and Herb are gonna move us into that place on Lavender Lane, and then you guys will be back with me and Dad, and we're finally gonna settle into a new normal.
And Shaw couldn't wait, because he got the basement room, and it had a bathroom down there, so he didn't have to see the stuff with girl crap all around, as well as a family room just outside the bedroom. So it was like he had his own apartment. Mamie also loved that house on Lavender Lane. It was sweet. And the family room downstairs was huge, and Dad said he'd install a bar down there. Corinne didn't want a new normal. She wanted the old one back. But she still liked that house, and not just because it was better than that apartment, because anything was better than that apartment, but because, it sucked to admit it, it was pretty awesome. And as mad as she was at her dad, she knew he needed a decent place to live. And this was absolutely not that, and it hurt a little more every time she saw him there. Shaw picked up the remote and turned the volume down a little on the TV. None of them complained. Greta had been through a lot. She needed her sleep. Chapter 17 Journey of Discovery Hickson Hicks opened his eyes to a dark room and laid still. Then he felt his lips curving up in a smile. Christ, he totally wrapped himself around Greta. Then again, she hadn't shared she wrapped herself around him too, front to front, arms around each other, legs tangled, her face tucked in his throat, his face in her hair. He drew her in with a deep breath, After that, he gave her a gentle squeeze and called, "Greta?" She shifted a little, pressed close, her arm over him flexed, and she murmured,
"Hmm?
Gotta get up and get the kids going. You can sleep, but it's pandemonium, and bathroom space is at a premium. For the next hour and a half, you won't have your shot if you don't take it now."
"Thanks, Bobby. Good."
She mumbled, ran her hand up his back, but it dropped, and he knew she had slipped back to sleep. Still smiling, he kissed her hair, carefully extricated his limbs from hers, and slid out from under the covers, making sure they were over her before he moved out of the room. She was in his bed again, because last night, when it became obvious to all of them the pain wasn't being overcome by Tylenol, he'd urged her to take a pain pill, and she'd passed out on the couch with her head on his thigh. The kids hadn't blinked when he'd carried her to his bed, and Greta hadn't moved when he'd joined her in it hours later. Even if that hadn't happened, she'd be there not only because that was where he wanted her, but that was where she needed to be, until they could both go to her house, and he could see where she was at, being back in a place that was her place, but it had been violated in the way it had. She seemed okay, but she was also with him and his kids. After they'd gotten back together at the same time, she was those right after she got attacked in her kitchen. She had a lot going on. Today might be a different story. Hicks did his thing in the bathroom, and on the way to the kitchen, he bent over his older girl and shook her gently awake. "Up, honey. Time to get ready for school."
"Gah,"
she replied, turning her head away from him. "Up, Cor. Hit the shower so I can get everyone moving," he pressed, giving her shoulder a squeeze.
"All right, Daddy,"
she muttered, turning her head again and pushing up on a forearm and shoving aside the bedclothes. Corinne was always up first because she took more time getting ready. She was also always the one who rarely fought it. The other two, the battle would soon commence. So even when he was with Hope, seeing as she worked for her dad and made her own hours, and he did not, he let her sleep in, and it was him who got the kids moving in the morning. Therefore, even in the days before Corinne's makeup and hair regime added 45 minutes to her get-ready time, he always started with the easy one first. Hicks went to the kitchen to start coffee to fortify his upcoming efforts. Then he began the process by informing both Shaw and Mamie in two different ways they had to get up soon so they could hit the dad snooze and mostly ignore him until he had to threaten them to get them to move their asses. As usual, pandemonium struck when Mamie got up because she pushed it to the final moments and then had to act like a crazy kid while getting ready to go to school. It didn't help matters that Hicks had to take orders for what his girls wanted to wear that day so he could get it from his room. And Mamie changed her mind three times. After she made her final decision, or more accurately, Hicks declared it was that, with Shaw horking down cream of wheat at the table, and Corinne eating it between doing shit to her eyelids with some applicator, her makeup bag having exploded all over the dining room table, Corinne asked her mirror,
"Is Greta coming to my volleyball game on Tuesday?"
Hicks stood in the kitchen with his coffee mug held up, his bowl of hot cereal on the counter beside him, and looked at his girl, who did not look at him. He glanced to his son, who was staring at him. When Shaw got Hicks's attention, his son gave him a slight shrug. Hicks looked back to Corinne. "You okay with that?" She didn't look from her mirror when she replied unfathomably,
"It's whatever."
Hicks and Shaw exchanged glances again before he told his girl, "I think for Greta and your mom, honey, that maybe we'll wait on that."
"Yeah, like I said, whatever,"
Corinne returned, dropped her mirror in her makeup bag, and started gathering her makeup and shoving it in. When she got up to return it to the bathroom, he called her name. She looked to him. "I really appreciate you being cool with Greta this weekend."
"Greta didn't date some chick, like, right after she divorced my mom,"
she returned, and immediately commenced storming off. Hicks blew out a sigh. Shaw called after his sister.
"Uncool, Cor." "Whatever, Shaw,"
she called back. Shaw looked to his dad. I'll talk to her again. Maybe we should let her get where she needs to go on her own, kid.
And maybe I'll give her a shot to do that, say she's got this week, and then I'll talk some sense into her, Shaw retorted.
Son, we're all getting used to a lot of new things.
And Dad, life is going to throw a lot uglier things her way, and she needs to learn to deal with it without being a pain in the butt, Shaw replied. I mean, it isn't like it's lost on her that that woman's husband got dead helping some guy out, and she was there right after Greta got attacked in her own kitchen. She needs to clue in. Stuff happens. You deal, then you move on. The end.
Gotta admit, it's freaking me out how smart you are, Hicks murmured, and Shaw shot him a big grin.
Yeah, I'm like Yoda, except taller, younger, and hotter.
Hicks started chuckling.
Mamie made an appearance on a sideways skid that didn't go too well on the carpet, so Hicks tensed to jump if she went down.
She didn't go down. She declared,
I left my backpack in your room, Dad.
Like this was the end of the world. Then I'll go get it, baby, he told her, sipping his coffee, putting it down, then moving out to do that. His kids got themselves sorted out, and Hicks stood outside at the top of the stairs, watching them get into Shaw's car so he could take them to school.
Mamie waved at him through the back window.
Shaw gave him a wrist flick before he folded into the driver's seat. Corinne kept her head bent to fiddling with her backpack in her lap, and she did this meticulously. Hicks watched them back out and take off, and then he went inside. To give Greta more time to sleep, he got his own shower in, got dressed, and only then did he wake Greta. Sitting in the bend of her hips, he watched her turn to her back, stretch, and open her eyes to look up at him. How she could look cute with that big bandage on her nose, he didn't know. But thank Christ she did, or seeing it would remind him how much he'd very much like to murder somebody. He had the light on in the hall, but he switched the one on beside the bed, watching her blink against it, even as he bent into her to block some of it out. I need to get you home and then get to work, baby, he said.
Right,
she mumbled, still looking sleepy, but now adding unhappy. I'm gonna be there, Greta. She pushed up on her elbows, looking down at her body in the bed.
Mm-hmm.
Babe.
Her head turned to him.
He's in a cell. I get you home. You're there with me. I leave when you settle and I know you're good. I do my thing, you do yours. I pick you up from work, take you to the hospital to get your dressing changed, and tonight is Monday night football. Shaw's with me full time now, so we can make that night a thing. Tonight, you're gonna be our special guest. Her eyes grew more alert as the sleep left her and she replied,
I can't horn in on your and Shaw's thing.
If you don't, he'll probably go to your house and get you himself.
Hickson.
Babe, you agreed to complicate it. You might as well give it all it's worth. Her pretty lips quirked under that big white bandage.
I have noted your son is much like his father when it comes to kicking in when a damsel is in distress.
Don't say shit that might mean they'll have to reset your nose, seeing as I'm wanting to kiss you and do it hard, he warned, and exited the bed before he did something else. Get up, sweetheart. Let's get you home.
All right,
she said, like she didn't want to, and tossed the covers aside. Hicks looked away, because he hadn't just carried her to bed the night before. She'd woken up groggy in the middle of him, trying to help her put on his tea before he'd put her in his bed. And she looked way too good in it.
I need my dress back, Hicks,
she told him as he moved toward the door to get her a travel mug of coffee. Just wear coarse stuff again, he told the door.
You know, you're depriving me of my Halloween costume,
she joked. He stopped at the door and looked back at her. Standing by his bed, her hair a beautiful mess from sleep, her eyes still lazy from the same, wearing his shirt, outside deciding to start a family, Hicks knew in that instant she was the best decision he'd made in his life. I'll give it back for trick-or-treat, he returned. Now, you want coffee?
Am I breathing?
Yep.
Then yep,
he grinned. She gave that back. Then Hicks went to get his woman coffee.
It's a kitchen,
Uh-huh.
It's your kitchen.
Yep.
With your stuff. Where you make great pancakes and look amazing wearing a robe. Greta was standing in his arms in her kitchen, now wearing his daughter's clothes and a pair of Corinne's flip-flops. Greta's purse was on the island, her Cherokee in the drive, his Bronco behind it where he parked it after following her there. As he'd asked, without bitching, Hal had gone to her place the day before and cleaned up the blood drips that had fallen on the kitchen island and the flagstone floors. How he managed it, Hicks didn't know. That porous stone would normally soak the blood and leave a stain. But he'd done it. Hicks made a note to buy his deputy a bottle as Greta tipped her head back to look at him.
What makes a man do something like that?
She asked. He drew her deeper into his body and dipped his face closer to hers. I'm not that man, so I don't know. I also don't care, seeing as there's no excuse for it. No reason I believe that was even close to valid behind it. All I know is he did it, and now he'll pay for it.
He said I don't matter, she reminded him,
because he'd heard her tell Hal that same thing while giving her statement at his dining room table the day before. And yeah, it was good she looked cute even with a broken nose, or Hicks would be fighting the urge to murder someone.
If I don't matter, why go through the trouble?
She asked. I wish I had answers, but I've seen a lot of shit people have done that have no answers, sweetheart. So I've learned not to wreck my head and my peace of mind trying to figure it out. It's their problem. He made it yours doing what he did. Don't make the rest of it yours trying to figure it out.
Good advice,
she muttered to his shoulder. He gave her a careful shake and got her attention back. I need to know you're good before I get to the department, Greta, he told her quietly. She looked from his eyes through the room, then back to him.
It's my kitchen,
she replied. He gave her a grin. Yeah, it is. She suddenly looked hesitant.
I can, call you if I get, well, tweaked?
I'd be pissed if you didn't. She relaxed against him.
Okay.
You're good? He pushed. She nodded.
At least I think I can take a shower and get to work. And then I'll tackle Monday night football with the two Drake men, and after that, we'll see.
Shaw won't mind you spending the night tonight, baby, he assured her.
I don't think he will, and he seems very mature for his age, but he's still only 17. So as complicated as this is, darling, maybe we should do what we can to make it less complicated for your kids.
When he opened his mouth to say something, she gave him a shake.
I might not be able to do it, being here alone, just now. So I might need to stay with you tonight. But I should also not let it go on too long.
Her lips tipped up.
And anyway, I can call you, right?
His lips tipped up too. Anytime. She moved her hands to bunch them in the fabric of his shirt at his sides, and she swayed him, ordering.
Then get to work, Sheriff.
He moved his hands to either side of her neck, bent in, and took her mouth with a touch that included a touch of his tongue against her lips. She parted them, so his tongue touched hers. He gave it that and necessarily pulled away before he felt compelled to give more. I'll meet you at the salon at 1 to take you to the hospital.
Okay, Hicks.
You want me to bring Harlequin?
Maybe we can go there later in the week, when I don't look like I went around with Muhammad Ali.
Fuck yes. I'd like that. She smiled.
Me too.
He gave her neck a squeeze, kissed her forehead, then let her go. He felt her at his heels as he walked to the kitchen door. Oh yeah. That ass in a cell in his station without Greta around, breathing and joking and being Greta, that urge he was fighting was going to get harder to hold back. She had her hand on the door before he even cleared it. He turned in it and looked deep in her eyes. You're safe, sweetheart. She nodded and swallowed. 1 o'clock, he said.
See you then, darling.
Yeah, you will. She forced a smile. He started moving to his truck, hearing the door close and the lock go, before he was 2 feet into that journey. He idled at the side of the road 2 houses down with his phone in his hand just in case. She didn't call,
so Hicks went to work. Hicks walked into his department to see Reva in dispatch, Larry at the back at the copier, Betts at her desk, and Hal at his. He did not look to the cells at the back. He would not look to the cells at the back.
That asshole existed, but Hicks didn't need to remind himself that he did, or waste even the energy it would take to aim his gaze at him, because he wasn't worth it.
He walked right to Hal, and stopped beside his desk. "Weekend on-call deputies get Monday off, Hal," he reminded him. Hal's face got hard, and he replied, "I want to take that jackhole to his bail hearing. Larry and Betts can do that. I brought him in."
"Yeah, and I get why you'd want to see that through.
So you and me will sit in the gallery during the hearing." Hal stared at him. Hicks ignored it. "Greta was hesitant about being back at her place this morning. Think that's going to take some time," he told Hal. "She didn't mention it, because she probably didn't notice it because she's not there in her head. But I know for a fact it helped, not seeing her own blood on her island and all over the floor. You might have done that because I asked you to do it as my deputy, but mostly you did it because you're a good man. And I appreciate it. So it's McAllen, right?" Hal stared at him a second, lifted the side of his fist to his mouth and coughed in it, and dropped his hand before he answered.
"Yeah, it is, but you don't have to do that."
Hicks felt his lips curl up.
"I know. If you thought I did, I wouldn't drop $100 on a bottle of single malt.
It's only 50, Hicks. You cleaning blood from Flagstone is worth the 15-year, man." Hal smiled at him. "We'll walk over to the courthouse together, drop by and get a coffee at Baby Cakes on the way back, and then you need to go home and take your day off, Hal. Right, boss?"
Hicks nodded.
Larry gave him a grin and a shake of his head as Hicks walked by him on his way to his office. Betts muttered under her breath,
"You're the shit, boss,"
as he walked past her desk. But she did it with her eyes studiously fixed to her computer screen, so he replied,
"Morning to you too, Betts."
Her lips quirked. Hicks's cell beeped as he was walking through the door to his office. He pulled it out of his breast pocket and felt the warm hit to his chest when he saw Greta's name above the text on the screen. He stopped and took it. It said, "Reporting in. I've survived the first 15 minutes. I made coffee and everything. All good." Hicks replied, "Great, babe. Keep it up. See you at 1. He hit send and waited. It sent immediately, no block. And he had only turned on his computer when he got back. 1. And until then, pray my next bandage isn't also the size of a mini diaper.
Getting that, Hicks didn't set the phone aside and tap in his password. He busted out laughing. "Bail set at $250,000, Judge Bearford announced. The defense attorney jumped up shouting,
$250,000? That's $25,000 in bond.
I do understand the bond percentage, counselor, Bearford replied.
Your Honor, that's outrageous. My client has never been arrested in his life. He has a business in Sheridan County with clients who count on him and employees who need him on the job. So he's not a flight risk.
The defense attorney began. Bearford cut him off. I hazard to say those thoughts should have occurred to him before this weekend's events.
Your Honor.
Sitting in the gallery beside Hal watching this, Hicks tensed as, uncharacteristically, Bearford swiftly lost patience, lifted a finger, and jabbed it at the attorney.
Listen to me, counselor.
His finger curled in. His thumb came out, and he thrust it toward himself.
This is my county. And I'll share with you right now, in my county, men don't shoot young fathers on the side of the road, and they also don't attack women in their kitchens. If they do, the message will be relayed with a clarity that cannot be missed, that they should not.
When the defense attorney was screwing up to say something, Bearford slapped his hand on his bench, lifted up a piece of paper, and kept talking.
Now, I've read the victim's statement.
He slapped it down and lifted up another piece of paper.
And I've read the witness statement.
Again, with the slapping and the lifting. This time, the blank side out.
and I've seen the pictures the hospital sent to our sheriff's deputy of the victim after the attack. Another slap down and lift. And right here, I have details of why this man has a protection order on him as lodged by his ex-wife. He also slapped that down. Now, he may not have been arrested in the past, counselor, but I assume you have passed the bar. So I'll advise you to have a conversation with your client. Because you see, if this court is forced to convene a jury to look into this matter, wasting time and county resources during sentencing, I'm going to be in a very bad mood. You've tried and convicted him yourself, Judge, the defense attorney spat. It's not my job to try and convict him, sir, Bearford returned. What I'm trying to communicate to you is that you'll have to ring miracles to come through with what I'm assuming with what's been laid before me this morning is a foolhardy promise you've made your client. There are glaring issues with this case. He was held at gunpoint by a civilian, for God's sake, the attorney retorted. Bearford leaned into his bench. Son, if you think for one second a jury of Nebraskans is going to have an issue with a neighbor hearing their female neighbor screaming, and they see her racing away with a face full of blood, then that neighbor jogging out with his pistol to see to things, you obviously come from somewhere else. He waved his hand to the prosecution table. Talk. Be smart. Do right by your client. And just to make things even more clear, if this gentleman posts bond and he's within 100 yards of the victim, he'll be accommodated by McCook County for some time, seeing as he'll be held without bail until this matter is settled. Before the defense lawyer could say another word, Bearford stood while slamming down his gavel and shouting, "Adjourned! All rise!" the bailiff called. Hicks had barely got his ass off the bench before Bearford disappeared through the side door, his robes flapping behind him. Larry and Betts came forward to get the defendant, while Gemini moved from his seat two rows back and approached Hicks and Hal. Gemini stopped and looked up at them. "I'll just wait for you outside, Hicks," Hal murmured and said. "Jones?" as greeting to Gemini while he shifted by him. "Deputy?" Gemini replied. They watched Hal go, and he was halfway down the aisle when Gemini turned back to Hicks. "It would seem I made you a promise I unintentionally didn't keep, Sheriff." "You're about as much to blame for that asshole attacking Greta as I am," Hicks returned, finishing with, "And it's Hicks." Gemini smiled, but it died as his gaze shifted to the defense table. "There are some who listen and learn, and there are some who need to experience harder lessons." "Yup," Hicks agreed. Gemini looked back to him. "He'll make bail." That morning, Hicks had learned the man who attacked Greta was some rich muckety-muck who did something with construction over in Sheridan County. This, maybe, being why he thought his shit didn't stink enough to shovel a colossal amount of it his ex-wife's way during their divorce. This also, maybe, why he thought he could sit in his car and face off against Gemini, his man, and Hicks in staking a claim to Greta he'd never have, thinking, maybe, if she knew who he was and how loaded, she'd feel flattered, or thinking he had the money to elevate himself above any shit they piled on him, thus convincing himself he was untouchable. He could just be psychotic. He just was an asshole. And until he made bail, he was now incarcerated, and things would go worse for him if he approached Greta again. It wasn't a guarantee. But he'd have to be an asshole, a moron and a tool, not to catch Bearford's message just now. And he didn't get as loaded as he was, being in the middle of those. The other two were a given. "She'll be all right," Hicks assured. Gemini's focus intensified. "Will she?" That was when Hicks's focus intensified. "Yes." Gemini studied him a beat before he murmured, "I see." Hicks suspected Gemini saw a lot. So he confirmed, "Yep." Gemini smiled again, but said, "I'm sorry you'll need to be keeping his company at your department until he posts bond and scurries back to Sheridan County. Not a lot of folk who take temporary residence in one of our cells are a bundle of laughs, so me and my deputies will survive.
still smiling. Gemini nodded. The smile died again when he asked, "Is she okay?" "You may need to find another act for a week or two, Gemini. She's okay, but he did a number on her nose. I'm sure she'll call and talk to you about it. Call me and try to explain how she can still sing so she doesn't lose her weekly installments to her Keep Andy Settled pot." "Sorry?" Hicks asked. "She looks after her brother," Gemini told him. "I know. I mean financially as well. She's his guardian." That wasn't a surprise, knowing what little he knew about her mother. But that little was enough. "So she sings because she loves it, and she sings because she has to," he murmured, mostly to himself. "I try to focus on the first part," Gemini said. Hicks wanted to as well. He knew Sunnydown. It was a nice place. But any of those places cost a whack. "She's a hairstylist," he noted. "Yes, but before that, well before that, Hicks, Greta is a loving sister." "Shit," he whispered. With all that was going on, none of this had occurred to him. And right then, it occurring to him, it also occurred to him. That had to be rough on Greta, and she lived that. She had for years. And he'd walked into her house, laying her out about a mother who put her brother right where he was, also putting Greta in the position to look out for him for the rest of his days. "Christ. Christ. I'm not telling you any of this as a break in confidence," Gemini shared, pulling him from his thoughts. "Everyone in town knows, except, it would seem, you." He lifted his hand and gave Hicks another smile before Hicks could speak. "I know. It's complicated. But I also know it's not my business." He dropped his hand, and the smile changed. "I further know, and am happy to do so, that you're about to embark on a fabulous journey of discovery. Enjoy, my friend. And while you do, take care of our girl." Hicks's mind full of all he'd learned, he could do nothing but lift his chin. Gemini gave him a low wave, turned, and walked away. At 1 o'clock, Hicks walked into the salon, his gaze on Greta, who was folding something at her chair. She looked wiped, dead on her feet. She should have taken the day off. "Hey, sweetheart. Ready?" he asked.
"Yeah. Let me grab my purse."
His eyes moved through the room, and he dipped his head to the woman sitting in a dryer chair, the one in Lou's chair, and he murmured, "Ladies?" He got a "Hickson" and a "Sheriff" before his gaze hit Lou. She tried to hide it, but she looked uneasy. He got why. He was there getting Greta, but there might have been times since he last saw Lou that Lou, being a good friend who looked out for her girl, a girl Hicks had asked to think about trying to make a go of it with him after what he'd done to her, had stated her case against Hicks. But it was more. The last time he saw Lou, she'd been out of line in a variety of ways, and now that things had come around with Hicks and Greta, she had a good friend who was seeing the man who she'd instigated him, learning something about his ex-wife that another man might wrongfully lay blame on her just because she did it. So it was his job to get them at least past that. "Lou, you good?" he asked. It seemed her entire body drooped with relief when she replied,
"Yeah, Hicks. Thanks."
He felt Greta come up to his side, her fingers start to touch his, and he turned his own to lace them through hers and look down at her.
"Ready?"
she said. "Right," he replied, bent in, and touched his mouth to hers. He could swear he heard a fluttering, female sigh coming from the dryer chairs. So he was grinning when he pulled away. She was grinning too, and her fingers were tight in his.
"Do me a favor, lawman,"
Lou called out, and Hicks turned his attention to see her jerk her head Greta's way.
"Get that one to cancel her clients tomorrow. She might look like a Charlie's angel, but she's not. And even Charlie would let one of his angels sit out a day. She got her nose busted by an asswipe. Sorry, ladies," she said to the women in the room. "No apology necessary, Lou," the one in her chair declared. He is an A-wipe,
the one at the dryer decreed. Lou looked to Hicks. Seeing as I'm her Charlie, she should listen to me. But she's not. Now if I gotta get a speaker to talk to her through, I will. Though I'd rather someone else talk to her, so I don't have to go through that effort.
I rent my chair from you, Lou. You're not my boss,
Greta chimed in.
Girlfriend, I'm totally the boss of you when you're being plumb nutty.
I'm not being nutty, I'm totally fine, Greta returned, sounding like she was getting heated. She also lied, because anyone looking at her could tell she wasn't fine, and not only due to the bandage covering her nose.
You do know I'm the mother of two girls, don't you?
Lou asked sarcastically.
Neither of them are 38 years of age,
Greta retorted.
And when they're 38 and being stubborn in a way that makes them stupid, I'll share my wisdom with them too.
Hicks felt Greta's body tighten at his side. So instead of laughing his ass off at their exchange, he intervened. Maybe you two can make a mud pit and sell tickets for the football boosters while wrestling this out after Greta's nose sets. But now, I need to get her to the hospital so we can make sure her nose will set properly.
That's disturbingly sexist, Sheriff Drake,
Lou shot at him.
And it would totally buy us a big screen, Lou, and don't argue, you know it would.
It would. I'd buy tickets to that,
the woman at the dryer put in.
And I'd absolutely take you,
Greta announced. Lou's eyes grew huge.
You would not. It would be embarrassing,
Greta taunted. Hicks fought chuckling as he started pulling her to the door.
Right. You're on,
Lou shouted as they moved. Hicks stopped chuckling.
Don't think I won't do it,
Greta retorted. That was when Hicks frowned.
As soon as that bandage is off, the gloves are off,
Lou returned. He stopped at the door and turned back. You're gonna both get over it, and not in a mud pit. I was joking, Lou. Greta's getting nowhere near a mud pit with an audience or without one, but definitely not with one. Greta jumped right on that.
That's only because Hicks doesn't want me to embarrass you.
Lou opened her mouth, but Hicks spoke. Say goodbye, Lou. She snapped her mouth shut and narrowed her eyes at him. He looked down at Greta, and not just to hold back the impending storm of him laying an order on a woman like Lou to declare, and you're taking the day off tomorrow. She glared up at him.
I am not.
He dipped close and said softly, baby, you're dead on your feet. Lou's right, you need to look after yourself.
She is right, you know, and so is Hickson,
the woman in Lou's chair called.
Hair usually won't wait for another day, but Greta, honey, your girls will wait for you.
Greta kept glaring up at him as she ignored that and asked,
can we go to the hospital?
He grinned. Sure. She looked away with a roll of her eyes. He looked over his shoulders and tipped down his chin. They got goodbyes as he walked her out. He took her right to his Bronco and helped her in the passenger side before he swung in the driver's seat. He started her up, backed her out, and had them on their way before he asked, you get lunch?
Yes,
she said shortly. He grinned again and asked, you pissed at me? It took her a second to reply, but she did it after he heard her push out a breath.
No, I'm just a little tired and achy, so I'm also just annoyed you and Lou are right. But I'm not pissed.
He reached out, took her hand, and rested both on her thigh.
Good. Now you want the good news or the good news?
He held her gaze so he glanced her way before he looked back at the road.
If it's that way, I want all the news,
she answered.
Well, to say the judge was not a big fan of a woman being attacked in her kitchen in his county is an understatement. During the bail hearing, he laid that asshole out. Essentially told him to make a deal, or if it got to him having the chance to announce a sentencing, he'd give him the maximum.
Oh my God,
she breathed. He unconsciously adjusted his hand from lacing with hers to glide his fingertips along the insides of her fingers as he smiled and continued to give it to her. So his attorney smartened up and sat down with our prosecutor. Unfortunately for that asshole, the prosecutor was handed all he needed to drive a hard bargain, this being something he did. This means that guy signed a deal admitting he committed three felonies,
They drop the breaking and entering to focus on trespass and stalking, mostly because trespass is much the same crime and holds the same punishment as breaking and entering, and stalking will mean he can't come near you even after he's out. Not to mention, the prosecutor wanted to push that the sentences would be served non-concurrently. This means the man is out on a $25,000 bond and has to a week to get his affairs in order before he turns himself in to serve non-concurrent terms of 2.5 years each for trespass and assault. 1 year mandatory protection order after he's out. And in the meantime, he's not allowed within 100 yards of you. She gasped, and her fingers curled back into his hand.
5 years?
He'll be due for parole a lot earlier, sweetheart. But criminal trespass and assault hold up to 20 years each. And if Judge Bearford was feeling any more ornery than he was today, something he said he would be if they forced a jury trial, he could have that.
Oh my God, that's...
She trailed off in order to bust out laughing. He twisted her hand in his and brought it to his thigh, giving himself the added gift of looking at her a couple of times while she laughed. When her laughter died down, he noted, I take it you like that.
Not thinking I'll be scared of my kitchen anymore,
she said as reply. Good, he muttered. She grew silent, but ended it to remark quietly.
It's Nat, isn't it?
He drew in breath and let it out, thinking he'd never thought she was stupid, but not knowing until then how smart she was. Yeah, he confirmed.
That's sad,
she said. It is. It's also a deterrent, he replied. 2 serious felonies committed in his county in a short period of time. When that shit doesn't happen here, the judge is sending a message that anyone else thinks they can pull something like that, they should think again.
Yeah,
she agreed. A lot of the time, the system is a mess, sweetheart. Twisted up with plea deals and cops screwing around, not doing their jobs right or having the need to prove who's got the biggest dick and judges worried about their next elections. It's not only good that it worked this time. It's good that it worked the time it needed to so you can move on. So that's it. You take tomorrow off, give yourself a day to start the process of healing, then you heal and move on. You with me on that?
Yeah, Hicks.
He lifted her hand, touched it to his chest, then put it back to his thigh, relieved she'd agreed to take a day off. Once he did that, and her fingers had tightened in his hold after he did, he told her, you should know, Gemini was at the hearing.
So word got out before I showed it lose with my nose like this,
she murmured. Actually, no, he replied. I asked Hal to call him yesterday. He felt her eyes, so he glanced at her before looking back to the road, and he kept talking. Did that for a variety of reasons, baby, he said quietly. First, it's about you and how I know Gemini is with you. Second, it's about Gemini and how he runs his business. This started in his club, and as a courtesy, not so much as the man in your life who holds the position I hold. So I was in the position to make sure he knew. But more as the sheriff of this county, who should extend a courtesy like that to a man like him who runs the business where this all began.
That makes sense.
He was glad she thought so. You need to call him, he said. He's worried about you.
I need to call a lot of people, she muttered. I cleared this afternoon, but I have a full schedule tomorrow. Think I'll keep Mrs. Whitney's appointment tomorrow night, though. She'll freak at the bandage, but she'll get over it and she needs the company.
Mrs. Whitney?
My at-home client. I go see her every other Tuesday.
You take at-home clients? Her hand moved in his as an extension of her shrug.
Just her.
She's sick or something? He asked.
No. Her husband has 0 brain function, so he's essentially in a coma, dying a very sad, very slow death in their bedroom upstairs.
Jesus, he muttered.
I know, it's awful. She doesn't get out much. She'd be okay with me rescheduling, but, you know. After a day and a half of rest, I should be good to do a wash, rinse, and set, so she'll have someone to talk to who can actually talk back for an hour or so.
Taking care of her brother. Taking Lou up on a challenge of mud wrestling. Going to the home of a lonely client to do her hair and give her a little company.
You're about to embark on a fabulous journey of discovery. Gemini had been right. And Hicks had been a total moron, putting at risk a future that included having Greta's ass and his Bronco at his side. "Hicks?" she called when he fell silent. His voice was gruff when he pushed out. "Yeah?"
"You okay?"
she asked. "Yep, all good," he said, squeezing her hand.
"Can I tell you something?"
she asked. He wanted to learn everything about her.
"Absolutely. If this doesn't work, you know, between you and me," she began.
His chest got instantly tight.
"Just saying, I'm totally stealing this Bronco, loading Andy up, and we're heading to Mexico. I feel safe in telling you this, because you'll never find us. But just so you know, we'll keep her safe, so you'll at least have that,"
she finished.
"And you know, just saying, I lose this Bronco, sweetheart, I'll go to the ends of the earth to find her," he returned, the tightness disappearing from his chest. He loved his Bronc, but he wouldn't be looking for his truck.
"Hmm,"
she mumbled.
"Seems it's best we work on getting along, baby," he suggested.
"Maybe you're right," she replied, then asked, "Can I drive her?"
"My ass isn't in her, yes."
"Is that an alpha male thing?"
He bit back a surprised bark of laughter and asked back, "Is it a what?"
"An alpha male thing, you know."
Her voice dropped low.
"Me, man. Me drive, you woman, you ride."
He chuckled.
"No, it's I own this beast, so I drive it if I'm in it, so she knows she always has my love. But I'm totally cool you want to take her for a spin if I'm not around."
"Okay, then,"
she said, sounding amused.
"Okay," he replied.
With that, he drove Greta to the hospital. Hicks also chuckled a lot as he drove Greta to the hospital. She ended up with only a piece of tape across the top of the bridge of her nose. Unfortunately, this highlighted just how deep the bruising was coming down the sides from her inner eyes. Also, unfortunately. But in the end, it worked out in his favor. She was in enough pain halfway into Monday night football with him and Shaw. She took a pill from the prescription they got at the hospital that they filled, and she passed out with her head on his thigh on his couch like she had the night before. So she slept in his bed, and he woke up with her there too. So yeah, it worked in his favor. And even better, when he dropped her in her kitchen the next morning, she didn't even blink, walking over the threshold. So it was all good, and Hicks rode that high to the department, not knowing it wouldn't last a full day. But now, there was Greta and Hicks's journey of discovery. So he would learn he was set up to deal with the hitches and goodness, because he was unblocked on her phone. Chapter 18. Put Me to the Test. Hickson. The next night, while Greta was with her at-home client doing a wash, rinse, and set, whatever that was, Hicks was walking into the high school's basketball court in order to watch his daughter play volleyball. The minute he walked in, his eyes went to the team benches to see his daughter in her red and black Raiders uniform with its long sleeves, two tight shorts, black knee pads at her knees, her dark hair pulled back in a ponytail, standing with her coach and the rest of the team. He felt his lips form a grin that died immediately when hope materialized in front of him. He stopped dead because she was blocking his way.
"Hicks, we need to talk."
He blew out a sigh and asked a question he knew the answer to because they'd been in Hope's care for only a day, and he'd seen one of them with his own eyes.
"The girl's okay?"
"Yes, but..."
She got closer, and her expression changed to one that Hicks had to work hard not to let annoy him.
They shared that woman spent the night at your apartment while they were there."
Hicks stared down at her.
"You know that isn't right, Hickson. You know,"
she hissed under her breath. He continued to stare down at her.
"The girls also told me the unfortunate event that took place that was the reason she was at your house. But it's not like the woman doesn't have friends."
she carried on. Hicks said nothing and just kept staring down at her.
If you must see her, don't shove her in the kids' faces, she ordered.
That was when Hicks sidestepped her and walked right by her, along the front of the bleachers. Knowing eyes were on him. His were on the wall at the opposite end where Toast had his back to the cinder block, the sole of his boot up against it, arms crossed on his chest. This was the position he'd assumed when he came to watch his daughter play volleyball. That was how he and Hicks had become friends. Their daughters played sports together. Shortly after his own ex made it impossible to sit in the bleachers without finding opportunity from close proximity to harangue him. When Hicks's back hit the wall at Toast's side, and he assumed the same position, Toast muttered, "Hate to say it, but welcome to my world, brother." Hicks just emitted an unintelligible grunt. "Let me guess, she's pissed your woman stayed over," Toast deduced. "While the kids were there," Hicks confirmed. "No, bro. She'd be pissed even if they weren't. Just gives her more ammunition that they were." Hicks made no reply. Just kept his attention on his daughter and her team. "And heads up, they lose all rationality. They lose hold on your dick and some other woman is enjoying it. It doesn't matter to her your woman got attacked. But the look she's getting, it matters to everyone else," Toast told him. That made Hicks slide his eyes to the bleachers, and it wasn't hard to read the censure Hope was getting as she made her way to a seat. It also wasn't hard to read she didn't miss it either. Fortunately, his attention was taken with his younger daughter skipping his way.
"Hey, Dad,"
she greeted, stopping toe-to-toe with him, bending forward so she hit him with her weight, resting the length of her along the length of him, her hands on his forearms, her head tipped back up to grin at him. "Hey, baby," he murmured, uncrossing his arms to touch a finger to her nose.
"Can I have popcorn?"
"Oh, shit. You ask your mom that?" he asked. Her expression told him the answer. "Mamie," was all he said next. She scrunched up her face, then slid to the side, but twisted as she did, so she ended up with her shoulder tucked into his side. He ran a hand around both and held her there. "Your brother here yet?" he asked, again scanning the bleachers.
"He's going to pick up Wendy, then he'll be here," she told him.
"Right," he muttered.
"Hey, Uncle Toast,"
she belatedly greeted. "Hey there, gorgeous girl," Toast returned.
"You want some popcorn?"
she asked and immediately offered.
"I can get it for you."
"And eat half the box before it gets here?" Toast asked. She gave him a sassy smile.
"Sometimes they don't fill it full."
Toast pushed away from the wall to pull out his wallet. "Then I totally want popcorn." "Toast," Hicks warned. "What?" Toast asked with sham innocence. "I had dinner all of 15 minutes ago." He gave Hicks's girl a bill. "I'm feeling peckish." She shot him a huge smile, grabbed the money, and took off. "More knowledge, brother," Toast began as he settled back in. "You got the opportunity to fuck with him or piss him off in any way, you take it. Hope doesn't exist outside being the woman who my daughters go live with every other week, man. But she likes to find every reason she can to remind me she does. I'm not a big fan of giving them to her." "She doesn't exist?" "Nope. Looking right at her, bro." Hicks took his attention from the court where the girls were heading out to look at Toast, and then follow where his eyes were directed to see Hope sitting in the stands, watching them. She no longer looked pissed. She looked sad. Christ. Hicks returned his attention to the players and said nothing. "She wants you back, Hicks." "And bad," Toast shared. Hicks said something to that. "If that's true, that's not going to go well for her. This other one, you know." His voice died away, so Hicks looked to him. "I know what." Toast looked uncomfortable when he said, "It's been a while for you, but you should know, you don't play with that kind." "What kind?" Hicks asked, wanting to know where this was going so he knew whether he was about to be pissed as shit or other. "The good kind, Hicks." "So it was other." Toast wasn't done. "Me being tight with you, everyone is opening wide about her.
And I've learned she's like a second mom to Lou's daughters, which is good, seeing as half the time they don't have a dad. Here she's got a brother whose brains were scrambled and she takes care of him. They go and play with the dogs at the shelter on the weekends, for Christ's sakes. Walked into Baby Cakes a Sunday ago or so, right after her and her brother left, and I swear, Baby Cakes laid it out for me, either I got your head out of your ass about this Greta woman, or the rest of the town would. Hicks blew out another sigh and said, "They can relax. We're back together. You got a solid rep, bro, but this woman is..." Hicks cut him off. "We're back together, Toast, and I'm not gonna fuck that shit up. I know what I got. I've got it, so I know. So they can relax, and you can too." Toast gave him a huge, goofy-assed smile. "Well, all right. When you bringing her to the outpost to meet your boys, then? Soon as the broken nose that asshole gave her slamming her face in her own goddamn kitchen island heals." While Hicks spoke, Toast's smile died. "Fucker," he muttered. "He's going away for a long time," Hicks said, watching as play began and his daughter, a starter as a sophomore on the varsity team, sprang into action.
"How much effort it take for you to not kick his ass while he was in one of your cells?" Toast asked.
"So much, it's a wonder I can walk." Toast chuckled and turned his attention to the game. They watched, and Hicks uncrossed his arms from his chest and clapped, shouting out, "That's it, Corinne!" when she aced a serve. Pissed at her dad, her head needing to be in the game, she still loved her old man, and he knew it when her eyes slid to him briefly and a grin flirted with her mouth as she walked to the line with the ball before she regained focus to set up for her next serve. "The kids like her?" Toast asked, after the team blew it and lost Corinne's serve. Hicks knew what he was asking. Did they like Greta? Nothing not to like. Toast left it a beat before he murmured, "Happy for you, bro. Way to land on your feet." Hicks glanced at him before looking back to the play. "You'll find someone, Toast. I need to get laid on a semi-regular basis and I need to stay single. Outside that bullshit getting me my kids, should have stayed single from the start. You'll get over that. I wouldn't bet on it," Toast muttered. Hicks shook his head and said no more. Hope and his shit was ugly. Toast and his shit with his ex was Armageddon.
As the teams were switching sides, Mamie skipped up with half a box of popcorn she'd consumed the rest of and handed it to Toast.
She then dug back into her dad's side, so Hicks held her there. He caught his son arriving, and tried to stay loose even after he also caught the expression on his face, and the set of his girls. Hicks gave Shaw a sharp look. Shaw shook his head at his dad, and Hicks knew the state of play with the way Shaw actually spotted his girl as she led them to some seats, like she was doing it with a broken foot. Things weren't going good with her dad's treatments. Shit. He'd talk to his boy. Now it was about Corinne, so he turned back to the game. After the game, while Shaw was finishing up his date with Wendy, which Hicks assumed would take him to the very last minute of his weekday curfew, Hicks pulled his Bronco into Greta's drive, but he rounded the front, seeing as he saw her on the front porch as he pulled in. He made it all the way to her, with her watching his progress, and bent to wrap his hand around the back of her head and touch his mouth to hers before she spoke.
"Hey, did she win?"
"No." "Bummer," she muttered. He grinned, let her go, shifted, and rested his frame in the chair beside her.
"Want a beer?"
she asked. "I'll get it in a second."
"I have a broken nose, Hicks, and not a broken leg."
He looked from her street to her and repeated, "I'll get it in a second." She rolled her eyes, but did it with her lips twitching. Then she lifted a mug to her lips and took a sip. "What's that?" he asked.
"Sleepy time,"
she answered.
"Say again,"
he ordered. She took her eyes from her street and repeated,
"Sleepy time. Sleepy time tea, chamomile, spearmint, and..."
He cut her off. "Babe."
"What?"
"Don't waste your breath. The concept of tea does not exist for a man who owns a Bronco." He enjoyed the show as she busted out laughing. When she was done, she noted,
Britannia ruled the waves, darling, and those boys drank a lot of tea.
The kind they drank didn't have spearmint in it.
Good point,
she muttered. Her lips curved up as she took another sip. He hated doing it, but he had to, so might as well get it out of the way. Hope was at the game. Her gaze slid to him.
And?
She's in the know you've spent the night at my place while the kids were there.
And she's not a big fan,
she guessed. Not sure I care, but just in case she gets up to something, you should know. She nodded and added,
and we'll slow that down.
No, they wouldn't. I like you in my bed. He also liked how her face got soft when he told her that.
I like it there too, baby,
she told him.
But your apartment isn't real big, and it's kinda in their faces more than it would be in that space. Plus, this is very new to them.
It's also very much happening, so they might as well get used to it.
Another good point,
she muttered again. And Greta, we're moving to a place on Lavender Lane on Saturday. She stared at him.
Lavender Lane?
He grinned at her. And he did it because he liked the place they found, but now he liked it even more, because it was two blocks to the north of her place, on the same block.
Wow, we're practically going to be neighbors,
she remarked, and did it looking like she was trying hard not to laugh. Yep, he agreed the same way.
You buy?
She asked. He shook his head. Nope. Everything on the market sucks, and I can't keep the kids in that apartment any longer. And not just because I hate the freaking place so much myself. Folks who own the house we picked are retired and moving to Florida. But they're worried they're going to hate Florida, so they're renting their place for a year to try it out. If they hate it, they'll come back and revisit where they want to spend their golden years. If they like it, they'll sell to me and deduct the year's rent from the final sale. She gave him a smile.
Great deal.
If they didn't come back, it was. If they did, he had to find another place. But they'd assured him they'd give him plenty of notice, and his real estate agent was going to keep an eye out in the meantime. It might mean moving twice in a year, which would suck. It might mean settling in. But even if it didn't, it gave them more time to find what was right instead of them moving into another place that was going to be wrong. Three bedrooms, two full baths, one in the master, on the top floor, he shared. Living room, dining room, half bath, big kitchen on the ground level. Refinished basement, where Shaw will be with his own bathroom and a massive family room.
Sounds like my place,
she noted. Your basement refinished? He asked. She nodded. You need to give me a tour, he told her. She tipped her head to the side.
You want that now?
He shook his head, pushing up from his chair. I want a beer now.
Hicks, I can get it.
He stopped and looked down at her. You got a problem with me in your house, baby? He asked softly with genuine interest.
Of course not, but I like...
Her teeth came out to score her lip before she finished.
Looking after you.
And fuck, but he liked that. How about I get my beer tonight, and after tonight, we'll go from there. She shot him a grin.
Works for me.
He gave himself a moment to fully take in her grin before he asked, You need more of that? And he tipped his head to her mug. She shook her own. Right. Be back, he murmured. Went in, got himself a beer, and came out. Doing it, giving himself his first chance to really take in her space. It wasn't only